I'm Wim Rietkerk, William, officially, and I've been a senior member of La Brie many years. Now senior, at other times just a normal member, since 47 years. So that's a long time.
Well, Wim, I'm delighted to have you with us, and I know that you had interaction with Schaefer. So my first question for you is, your first encounter with Francis Schaefer, when was it? Were you a Christian or were you not?
I know it very accurately. I listened to Francis Schaefer on our theological seminary in Kampen. Maybe you know Kampen, that is mm-hmm. the seminary of the, let me say, Orthodox Reformed Church. And I was there in my first year. And then in Holland you have we call that a greening time. That means that you have to do all kind of tasks and duties in order to come to a close friendship in a short time. Anyhow, they call that a greening time.
Yes.
In that framework, I had to listen to a man from Switzerland that came at our school to give a lecture. So I had to go there, and I went. And there was this small, passionate man, Francis Schaefer. It turned out to be an American. I thought he was Swiss, but it's an American. And he was translated by Hans Rookmaker. And Hans Rookmaker was standing at the pulpit on the floor. That was a little pulpit. And Rookmaker was standing there on the floor and talking like, this is Francis Schaefer. And Francis Schaefer passionately giving his talk. So that was in September 1916. And then I was at a theological school. I was reformed.
Yes.
I certainly was, otherwise I wouldn't have chosen that. I was a committed Christian. But on the other side, it was still very young. And looking back, very young and limited in its content. And so in a way, Schaefer was very important for me, because right at that first time that I still know exactly what he was doing. Right at the first time, he touched me, because he talked about La Brie, what he wanted, but the main thing was on what kind of message should we send out to the world in Europe. And then he made this point that, well, when you look to the history of European history, then the churches have been in conflict with each other in the past on all kind of things, Lord's Supper, you know, all these things between the Catholics and the Protestants, and baptism. He said that's not at all at stake now. What now is at stake is a much more profound thing, and that is the, when you talk to people here, there is a very profound doubt whether God is really there. And that touched me, because I thought, wow, yeah, that is true. And this is something I would like to be involved in, because I feel that he is touching the deeper problems of today. So I wrote him a letter in the flow of the year and said, can we come next year with a friend? And he wrote on the side of a family letter, these old family letters, you know how they looked like.
Yes.
Handwritten. Yes. Nothing but thank you for your letter, always welcome. So we went hitchhiking to Switzerland, 1961. So in 61, I went there with two friends.
Yes.
I stayed there for several weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was an extended family at that time. It was not yet so structured. It was a very nice place, a very nice community. Maybe in the week time, 12, besides the team that was there. And in the weekend, people came up. But it gave me the feeling of an extended family, but with the privilege of a person who was there to whom you could talk and who took the time to talk to you. The meal times at that time were always very long. in the summertime, many times good weather, so then it was outside. And that we call that up to today formal meal. That means you have to keep your mouth shut and listen and be involved.
Yes.
You could ask questions or discuss things, but that was Schaefer doing. Sometimes 2 hours, 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock, it was finished. That was the teaching time each day. And then a special setup for the weekend. So that's how I came in contact with La Brie, and that inspired me very much.
And so you spend 3 weeks there?
Yeah.
And you go back to the Netherlands?
To the Netherlands, and then continued the second year of my study.
Yes.
And
you were studying for theology?
Theology.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did theology at Compton Seminary.
Yes.
And then I became a pastor in 66. Mm-hmm. And then I finished the seminary, but it just turned over to February 67. Now it's 2017, so it is next week, 50 years ago exactly.
Oh my.
I started to be a pastor.
Yes.
But I always had in mind this work of La Brie, this is what I want. This is what I want in Holland. So we kept in contact. I met my wife in Switzerland in 64, and we married, and we went there as I was a pastor for more contact. But we developed, together with Professor Roopmaker, whom we never called Hans. It was always, in that sense, formal.
Yes.
Interesting when you look back. But together with him, we had a Bible study group. He was the leader.
Yes.
He set it up, but he always was very happy that I, as a young pastor, was involved. So he had a Bible study in Leiden, later on in Diemen, close to Amsterdam. And out of the Bible study grew weekends. And those weekends were overwhelmingly visited. It was really exploding. One announcement and 100, 200 people came up. So that grew, and from that initiative, the next step was taken to set up a residential La Brie in Holland, which was decided in 1970, and 71 we started. From that moment on, I left the church I was in and went to Eckenwiel and lived on the property in Eckenwiel. Always I remained pastor, that means the preaching on Sunday and involvement with church work was always there. In the meantime, I studied at a more liberal university, philosophy of religion in Leiden, and finished that. And then the work of La Brie was so much growing that I couldn't do the church at the same time. So we worked for years full speed in that residential work in Eckenwiel in Holland. And Roopmaker died. That was another sudden, unexpected disaster. So then from 77 on, we went without him. The work went continued and has been since then with ups and downs going on with always different team. And you go work like that is very, let me say, very, how would I call it, adventurous in one way, because you have no solid structures and patterns. You have to work very much on the basis of personal relationships. But it was a good thing to do, and I've always been wholeheartedly involved. So that's my story. In the international work, when Schaefer died in 84, then after some years, we were really going through rather big waves. I think you know enough about that. I was the chairman at that time, and that made me very much involved in the whole development of the after post-Schaefer time.
Mm.
The So that's still vivid in my memory. And just now, 2 years ago, I did give it up. I was 75. At 75, I gave up my being a chairman. And now, at the moment, my son-in-law is the chairman of the Labriburg in International.
Okay. So what is it? You've talked a little bit about Schaefer, but what was it about the man that stood out to you?
Now, I expected, of course, that question. What was your general observation and experience with Schaefer? I think two things. The one thing is an extraordinary gift of making a personal contact. You could call it with the name pastoral, but it was not. It was just a personality which was very warm. Mm-hmm. Schaefer had a very warm and personal approach to people, so that you felt when you talked with him, you felt understood, and you felt that he saw you. That kind of strange feeling that you can sometimes have with people that. But that is not normal, not regular, and in his case, I think extraordinary. I've seen that with other people too. He could meet people in a very warm way where he, in fact, did not yet know them. So he built up a quick, very personal relationship, and it turned, it comes with memories too that... show the same concern, which I can understand now better, and that is he came back from one time from one of his trips through Europe, came up the garden, walked in, and I greeted him, and he saw someone walking there, and then the first thing he said is, what's her name? And then he added, it's always terrible if I don't know the name of somebody. And I know that feeling too. You have that too, of course. We all have that problem. I mean, don't ask me. At the moment, I sometimes do not even dare to ask. I forget names. But the interesting point that fits to the personality side is that even where he hardly met somebody, he wanted to know the name. He wanted to see them in their individual personality, had a profound gift, as pastoral gift, you could say, and almost a counselor, although he didn't like that word. He didn't like the word counseling. That sounded for him too professional.
Well, it's interesting, Vim, that you say all this, and you're saying it's kind of like I hear an echo of other people who knew Schaefer.
I'm sure.
And so it just reinforces that this wasn't just an occasion that somebody saw this. This was who he really was.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, that he was called, that 1960 article in Time magazine, that he had a ministry to the intellectuals. And some people always try to call him a philosopher. But he always seemed to say, no, I'm not a philosopher. Everybody is in some way, right? But he never really wanted that kind of title of an academic. But that comes out when you say he has this pastoral way about him.
A message for intellectuals, I can understand it, because that's the second you... I said I have two reactions on how do you know Schaefer. This is the personal side.
Yes.
But then in the teaching aspect, and not only the teaching, also... his presence in a community, and Edith is important in that field too. That is that I met in the Swiss Labri a man who was Reformed, you call it Presbyterian, but from the Reformed tradition.
Right.
Later on I discovered also influenced by Kuyper through Van Til. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see at that time that connection immediately. But he felt in the content of his teaching very close, very at home. And nevertheless, there was something in Labri and in Schaefer and in his wife that I did not find in the Reformed tradition. So when I said I... looking back, I belong to the people that have been enriched, mm-hmm. Who had, in a way, somewhere on the other side of Christianity, which I found there, that was new for me. That has to do with guidance. It has to do with a personal relationship with God. That has to do with prayer. That has to be with being really dependent in the worldly things. And this whole atmosphere was for me new and very enriching. Something that I looked forward to for the next year, to be there again. Mm-hmm. Because there was some kind of atmosphere of hanging on that God was really there doing something. So that kind of atmosphere was there, and I hope still is, yes. In La Brie, because that is what we continue in the line of these basic principles of La Brie. And you know that one thing of A4, one sheet,
yes,
where the basic principles are, they are very crucial, yes. For the whole of La Brie, and made it really a point to continue that in the same way as Schaefer and Edith has set it up. But that is the other side. That's the teaching side. And in the teaching side, looking back, I look back to it now from a distance and then a bit wider look. I think it has to do with with that thing that Schaefer always said, and that the church has two legs, reformation and revival. And if they walk only on the one leg, it's one-sided, and if they walk on, they need them both. You need two legs under the body. And that's looking back, if you put it a bit historical, I could say, yeah, to myself, I came in contact with the revival tradition, the revival aspect of Christianity, and since I'm a convinced man of developing church life and Christianity, on the basis of this very simple statement of Schaefer, the church needs two legs, because the revival side is highly personal. It has to do with the work of the Holy Spirit. It has to do with the reality of God. And it's that dimension that I was lacking in my own background, and that in which I, looking back, was very happy to find it there. Yeah.
You mentioned prayer. Would that have stood out in your mind with Schaefer, that he took prayer seriously?
Yeah, you must have heard it from others too, but I can give stories with it. Because for Schaefer, in the community, Schaefer was prayer was very important, the Monday prayer meeting, for me new,
yes.
And a little bit shocking. Praying the whole day, and then I could be involved, and you could, a minimum was half an hour. But I even thought, Wim, are you going to pray half an hour? I never managed that, so I stayed away from that for a long time, until I understood that it's also meditating, yes. And it's not so much that you half an hour, anyhow. But that was in the community. But on a personal level, that was something for which Schaefer stepped out in a rather, for me, new and surprising way. I mean, he went, that's also special, he went with some students on a hike. Monday was his day off, and then he went on a hike and invited people that were there, for me also several times, to go with him. I like that, because I'm a Dutchman. We have no mountains. The highest mountains, you always laugh, the highest mountain in Holland is 300 meters. And so I said, I come from 300 meters to 4,000. Then I hiked with him several times on the Monday, on his day off. And then we started talking. And then after an hour, he said, listen, this is my day off. So I stopped now talking. But he wouldn't stop. He said, let's first pray. And he was sitting on a big stone there on the mountainside, and then prayed with me about the things we had been talking about. So that kind of natural habit of always living with discussion and prayer, That struck me. Also here in Holland, when he went here, not here, but in Holland, when he came many times, of course, visiting us, then in the car or wherever, or with an editor, that I felt a little bit uneasy, the editor of his book, Kallenbach, the director, came to him to talk about the book. And after half an hour, I saw him praying with the man. And I thought, maybe he must have shocked him a bit, because for Dutch people to feel that free to have someone praying over you is not the regular thing, let me put it like that. So that was typical for him. Yeah. Prayer was very important and crucial, and also in the members' meeting, times of prayer, that was always there. And that belongs to this this dimension, that aspect of the Christian life, which was the reality of God in your daily life. That's what he said in True Spirituality. Eh? It's the present work of the Holy Spirit in us through Christ that is key, and that helped him out of this depression. And that has been with him, I think, his whole life. That was always special to do that, or sometimes uneasy, because you wouldn't believe it, but in a Reformed seminary in Holland, to have a meeting and then to pray loud is at that time, it changes, it has changed in Holland too, but that can make it uneasy too, because suddenly he could just ask anyone, say, okay, can you pray with us? Okay, all belong to it.
What was the relationship between Hans Rootmacher and Schaefer? From what I read, they might have been kind of two different personalities.
Very different, because Schaefer is a passionate personality, and Hans Rootmacher is cool, keep it cool. I don't know, of course, all things about their personal relationship. I stepped into it when they, for the first time, came in Kampen. But since then, of course, I traveled together with Rookmacher always to Switzerland for the members' meeting. And I've seen them together. I think they were kind of maatje, we say. They were a close companion friendship in equal matter. And what is that matter? That is talking to modern men. That is, we are talkers. That's what he wrote it one time to Schaefer. We are talkers. They were talking. They communicated with people around them from different areas who had their questions and who were not Christians, or they were Christians. And then that was not just talking alone, but it was also circling around interpretation of their work, communication about basic theological topics or philosophical issues, talking always about truth in art and how to think about it. And I think they met each other in 1948, and it clicked immediately. I've heard that from them. In the relationship they had before my own eyes, it was a close companionship in exchanging ideas and stimulating each other on that point. And Schaefer told me, sometimes I don't know who was the first to come up with that idea. If you ask me how that worked, then I would say that the spiritual side, which you can find in the book of Hans Rookmacher, the well-known one, Death in the City?
The Death of Culture.
Death of Culture, that one, the main popular book. You find a warm spiritual terminology in that book, which is, for book on art, I think, special. I would say that is where Schaefer Rookmacher influenced. On the other side, when you hear Schaefer talking about Les Dames de Moiselle, or who is it, Picasso, a painting, and this and that, then I would have the view that came from Rookmaker. I think the professional insight that Rookmaker easily gave away. He always gave lectures with slides on modern art, all kinds. Many of them I've listened to. And they exchanged that, and that professional analysis that he gave. I think that is what Schaefer got from Rookmaker. That's my view.
Yes.
So there's an exchange. And yeah, not always you will be able to see the exact division between the two.
I understand you did Hans Rookmaker's funeral. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I was that Sunday evening. He had been in the church in the morning. And it's taped. Many times in the church he took, whether he really took a nap or closed his eyes, I don't know. But at least that morning he didn't. Mm-hmm. And he was really with the sermon. He was involved. And then in the evening at 7 o'clock, yeah, but now it was 8 o'clock. Right after the meal, she phoned me and said, "Wim, come." It was 4 kilometers from the home where they lived. "Come immediately. I think my husband is dead." She said it immediately. And so I said, "First thing you do is telephone the doctor." She had me first. And then so she telephoned the doctor. And I went with my car, high speed, and I came in there. Living room, and he was just watching television as he died. And I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well," he said to me, "Oh, I feel bad." Boom. Then he was away. It's just one little sentence, and then he was there, and he died. Yeah? And then, of course, that all the details. But then he was buried right behind the Labrie. There is a funeral, a graveyard.
Yes.
And that's where he was buried. And that is about a mile from the village, a village church. And in the village church, people came together and I led the service with a sermon on Revelation, I think. Yeah, Revelation. And Mahalia Jackson.
Yes.
Music of Mahalia Jackson. And Schaefer wasn't there, but Udo spoke, John Sandry spoke, they too, Dick maybe, I don't know, but at least some of the Labrie people spoke at the service. And then we walked to the 1 mile to the graveyard, and the whole mile was filled with people, because this, for a man of 55, in the full force of his life, that was really something, and so the funeral was very well attended, and suddenly we lost him. And then there was a kind of what they do in the United States is very many times a kind of memorial service.
Yes.
That you do that. Yes. It's not normal in Europe, but we did that with Rookmaker in the chapel. I think at least 2, 3, 4 weeks later, I think that, yeah, he died in February, so it must have been just at the members' meeting. That's always the end of March, or that kind of time, and then the members' meeting started with a memorial service where Schaefer talked about him.
Oh, and so Schaefer was at the memorial service.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it was a terrible shock, was it not, to Schaefer? I mean, to everybody.
I never heard from Schaefer himself, because I was shocked. And I had to tell them about what kind of effect it had on him. I don't know. I never had a personal talk with him about it. That does not mean, that means nothing. Because certainly he was shocked. We all were shocked and felt it as a great loss.
Yes.
And so that feeling must have been evident with Schaefer too. And in his speech on the memorial service, he expressed that. Yeah, but it was already some distance, so the kind of alarming feeling wasn't there anymore. But more observation, a friendship that ended.
So you are now working, or you were working in Le Brie, and still concerned about speaking into the culture, the, yeah. the what are we going to call the modern man, postmodern man, whatever you want to call, the university student yeah. and the man on the street. What do you think that we could learn from Schaefer that would help us in our communication of the gospel to the 21st century?
Now, here too, there are two sides. The on the personal side, I would I learned a lot, and I hope I have some of his gifts, but I can't tell that about myself. But I hope I have, because I think they are wonderful gifts, and I think that that would be the first thing, and that is to take the person to whom you speak absolutely serious. And try to understand, not just first talk, but first listen. So the whole the well-known statement from in Le Brie, questions and answers, the honest answers and honest questions yes. can be taken, let me say, philosophically, but I take it in the practice. At first, very personal, and that attitude is very important for us. And I think we do, I don't talk about myself, but I think we do inherit that. Because whenever you go to a Le Brie, I've never in Holland had any, let me say, dispute in the sense of a debate with someone that was unhappy, that you feel unhappy about, making a quarrel, fighting, or it is always done the communication in an attitude of personal understanding, of really trying to understand, and then you might differ. You would say, and then, so this approach of Le Brie in Switzerland of welcoming foreigners, strangers from outside, and talking to them in a personal way, taking them serious, is crucial, and that is, I think, typical for our work. So that people, and they tell me, yeah, in our work too, and the author branches is absolutely the same. The main reaction of people is that they feel the atmosphere is open. Also, when they come from outside, the atmosphere is open. I feel respected. I feel respected. I may be what I am. I can tell what I want to tell. I can ask questions. That's one side. And the other side is, where I have my own questions about. That is the more, let me say, theoretical side. You can find that in The God Who Is There, chapter 4. I gave that always with the approach of Schaefer, pushing them to the extreme of their, and then taking the head of the you know, this yes. Apologetic approach, which I liked it when I heard it, and I still think it is, but it is a different time. We hardly have discussions on that level with people. So the whole of Le Brie, I must say, has turned more in the direction of personality growth, of personal the personal encounter, and less the real apologetic debate, which I saw happening in Switzerland, which I've done for in let's say the end of the 60s and the 70s. In the 70s, I still remember discussions that I had with people where I, being taught by Schaefer, had that attitude, pushed him a little bit further. But right now, I hardly ever have a discussion on that level. Why? It has to do with the fact that the whole atmosphere of consistent thinking and wanting and really want to have a rational solution for your questions is less present. But that was true in there in Switzerland, and I think in a way we all do it in a personal level. That, but then it has It is in a setting of the whole person that you say, well, think consistently what you are saying. Do you really mean that? Do you really mean it? Kind of question. That is Schaefer style. Do you really mean that? And do you realize that if you take that position, it leads to that?
Mm.
But then that last point starts to be problematic, because they turn off. They would say, yeah, maybe for you it's logical, yes, but not for me. And this rational consistency is much less present today. And that's call it whatever you want, postmodern or something. But that is a difference. And that it was in Schaefer's days with existentialism and more dominant, I think.
So we are living in different times.
Mm.
And it may be that the younger generation, and maybe even some of the older generation, are not asking questions anymore, as they might have been and were in the 60s, the 70s.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe our task then is more to be on the personal side and to get them to see what the questions are. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. In a way, you have to adapt. And you can see it in the literature and the speakers of La Brie in the 80s. And the 90s, then Dick Caius with his book, and Richard Winter with his books. And I wrote a book on, If Only I Could Believe, which is on the psychological barriers to come to believe.
Mm.
They are just what I found in my conversation with people. I just piled up. They are lectures on that issues, on anxiety, shame, and so on. These things are there. And today, people, young people, are very much, let me say, emotion and experience directed, which right now and makes me a little bit more moving back to wait a second. There is also more to say than only how you feel it.
Yes,
and so we. In a way, La Brie in Holland, in the last conference which we had together with New Wine, we are then the people that would say you have to be sincere in thinking it through.
Yes.
So thoughtful Christianity belongs to La Brie, whatever you say, and even where we adapt to the let me say the experience-oriented mentality. We do not really give up the whole thoughtful Christianity approach, and we see that there is growing need for that. So it could be that tomorrow we will maybe more even be used and respected for this approach. So I hold on to that. And when people say this weekend is a bit too intellectual, right now, I don't think it's such a bad comment.
Mm.
Maybe if you step, if you don't move into their lives, it's wrong. But today, I think it comes back.
Mm. We must be intellectually honest.
Yeah.
As Christians, but that doesn't mean that. We must also be empathetic.
Yeah.
Because what has culture made of these people?
Yeah.
And the way they think. Well, as we bring this to a close, any one story that you want to tell me about Schaefer?
One story?
One story that you might want to tell me about Schaefer that that particular experience with Schaefer. You told me about going out for the hike on the Monday, but do you have something else that you would share, or do you think?
Now, maybe then you talk about things that have touched you the most deeply.
Yes.
That was not so much what comes in my mind now, not so much an incident, or which I can tell too,
right.
But that was more a sermon. And then I would say the sermon, Rock of Ages, that he preached the sermon, Rock of Ages, and then with there is a hymn,
yes,
Rock of Ages,
yes,
cleft for,
yes,
me, and,
yes,
and he. But the point was, what I found very special in that sermon, that was, let me say, the combination, which is characteristic for Schaefer in general, the combination of the powerful breaking down, almost the fist on one side, call it holiness, and the compassion,
mm,
on the other side. So the whole picture of you're smashed against a rock, but then there is this cave in which you're hidden and your life is saved.
Yeah.
And that came out in that sermon in a very special way. So that would be my most provoking, the sermon that, and the word that meant the most to me when I think back.
Yes.
And that, yeah, you met in Schaefer special, yeah, spiritual man who could be very strong. And in that sermon too, I felt smashed,
mm-hmm,
which you hardly ever have. You have old sermons from the Puritans, mm-hmm, and where they preached about sin and hell, that you were the stories go like that.
Yes.
Now, that was not what Schaefer did, but he did it. He did it with this. In one way, I felt that. And the anger of God against sinfulness. And at the same time of this, at the same time when you were smashed,
mm-hmm,
this other side of the cave. And that is what he wrote about, eh? Holiness and love, this little booklet.
That's right.
So that all hangs together. But that, yeah, that's a special memory from an, I've seen him, of course, in many forms. And it's a bit gemeenplaats, we say, commonplace, you say that. It's a bit a thing you always say, a man has his,
yes,
weaknesses.
Yes, yes.
Certainly he had, and
sure.
I saw several of them.
Yes.
In a way, some of them. He had his own. He could be angry, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And in anger he could be violent. Violent, yeah.
Yes.
The same sweet man, because, yes, basically he was a very sweet man.
Yeah.
But he could burst out in anger. And so, yeah, he had his own problems. He would be the first to say that, yeah. And, yeah, there are these moments that you met that. He said about himself, I'm a profound worrier. It always stuck with me, too.
Yes.
I'm a profound worrier.
Yeah.
He made problems with nothing. We traveled to a conference, and then his suitcase didn't arrive. You, what happens with these,
yes,
airplanes? For me, it means nothing. Now, I was really worried about that.
Mm.
That kind of thing. Then he said to me, watch out, I'm a profound worrier. I thought, that's...
Well, I've said before, all that we're doing today and what we're trying to do with the collection and interviews, we're not trying to make an icon.
No.
Out of Schaefer, but we just believe that he has much to say to our day, and I think he is one of those people whose ministry in life will, if it's allowed, will speak into generations to come. Unless, you know, until Jesus comes.
Yeah.
I just feel that strongly,
mm,
about, he was a man that apparently... all very human, not perfect, but a man whom God used greatly.
Mm.
He's not the only one,
mm,
but he is certainly one.
Mm.
And maybe it's because of his influence in my own life that I feel that strong about it, but I do.
Mm.
And I just want to say thank you for your time today and to talk about this, because it's really wonderful.